Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Socially Savvy, broadcasting live here at Petite Creek Cellars in Woodinville. I'm your host, LB Duchess, with co-host Michael Kotzman, our food and wine ambassador. Our guest host, Jason of Seattle Wine Exchange, the tasting room manager, Brooke, and of course, our Socially Savvy guest. Hello, everybody. Everybody's trying to get situated. It's been a Monday. It's been a Monday in a big way, hasn't it, people? Yeah, that would be the tempo. Everybody's giving me this look. We have not had enough wine to drink yet. Well, we are in Seattle, obviously, on the east side in Woodinville, and the weather is very typically Seattle. We have some rain, we have some clouds, which to me is the perfect invitation to grab a great bottle of wine and cuddle up on your couch. I don't know how you guys feel, but that's the plus. I guess there's got to be an upside to everything, right? Okay, so feel free to call in for today's show, 323-843-6090. Today's show is brought to you by Petite Creek Cellars, the new tasting room in Woodinville. And it looks like they are pouring the wine right now. Michael, you want to introduce us to this fabulous wine?
Looks like we got a Chardonnay. Is that the bottle right there?
Yes.
Perfect. It's a 2008 Chardonnay. Tell us a little about the Chardonnay. Where's the vineyard at? How long you guys been here?
Okay, so the vineyard is actually Tiona Vineyards out of Red Mountain. Yeah, really beautiful Chardonnay grapes. The vines are actually about 32 years old. And so technically by Washington standards, it's considered a old vine Chardonnay. Even though 32 years is not that old in Washington world, it is. A unique thing that we did with this wine, my winemaker was never really a big white wine fan, and so he really set out to make a white wine that he would love. And he did that by doing, when he got the grapes, he crushed them, put them into neutral oak barrels, and threw them into a room that was incredibly cold and really drew out the fermentation process, the primary fermentation process. And by doing that, he intensified the flavor into the wine of the actual grape rather than intensifying the flavor of the oak. So when you taste it, you're not feeling like you're licking the inside of
an oak barrel.
Because nobody likes that.
I remember when I came to your open and I drank the Chardonnay. We've talked about this, I don't know, like maybe a half a dozen times now, how Washington wines have not been your typical quote-unquote Chardonnay producers. And when I drank this, it's like I taste all these citruses, which really took me by surprise.
Oh, totally. And that's simply because he really tried to just intensify that flavor of the actual grape rather than everything else around, you know, in the environment of it. And what the oak actually did was it added to the body, so you don't get this really weak kind of lighter style Chardonnay like you would with a one that's simply done in stainless steel. By adding in the oak, you get a little bit of body to it, which is really nice and really elegant.
And what's the year?
It's an 08.
Okay, I was going to say, it has the body of an older wine.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I really
yeah.
enjoy that.
Michael's
looking at it.
It's good. No, it's you definitely get the oak on the nose, so I'm not sure. I mean, I get butter, I get caramel, I get, you know, some of the nice yum yums I do like from oak, which really actually it rounds off the acid.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a really nice nose. It's got, you know, if I'm looking at the wine and you're looking at it against the white background, and it's definitely a straw yellow color. It's got a nice color, nice nose. Let's try that.
It's delicious. Yeah, we know how it can be about white wines. I have to say, Washington wines actually took me and romanced me into white wines, because before that, I had no desire to drink white wines at all.
Nice. That's really nice. Actually, it's really interesting because you typically get, you know, your stone fruits that come out of California with these kind of flavor profiles. So, like, you get not only did I get like, oh, now I get like pear at the end, like apple, a little bit of pear, but it actually comes off a little bit with pineapple.
I was going to say, I get a little, the first thing that hit me was the citrus.
Tropical. It's got good length too, so it's got like a, now I'm getting a little minerality, some citrus, lemon. That's fine.
Thank you.
And we love
that on to Joe. They'll love it.
We love that you're one of the newest additions to Woodinville.
Yeah.
And you, so being the newbie on the block, how long have you guys been producing wines outside of having a tasting room here in Woodinville?
We've been producing since 1998. And we started in Dayton, Washington, which is a really small, don't blink, you're going to miss it kind of town between Pullman and Walla Walla.
Uh-huh.
And the, it's very unique because it actually has a 5-star restaurant in the middle of it.
Okay,
I want to say it's like there's a 5-star, probably even a 4-star. I mean, it's just random. And,
wow.
You know, it looks like Mayberry. It's absolutely the cutest little town you've ever been to. Yeah. And we started in a gas station down there with the original owners. And in 2007, I want to say, our current owner took over and moved the production up to Walla Walla. And that's when we hired on Joe Forrest, who's our winemaker, and started expanding what we were doing. Because up until 2006, all we did was in Washington, specifically Walla Walla Valley, Cabin Merlot. And that was it.
I say, because you have a temper. You have one of the best tempranillos. I'm sorry, in Woodinville. And you're sold out, which just drives me right up a wall.
It might be coming out soon.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to throw that out there as a teaser. It could possibly be coming out
sooner than expected.
You're new, right?
Oh, you are such a tease.
I know.
Are you going to be in the, over at the, there's a big Tempranillo tasting coming up here. It's looked at a couple weeks ago in the wine world, but there's a big one coming up here this month, mid-month, I'm looking at it.
It won't be out by then. We're actually looking at maybe late November. I'm trying to talk our owner and winemaker into allowing it to go into the October Wine Club shipment. And I think I've got them convinced. So really, if you're wanting it, you have to join the wine club.
I'm
like,
put me on the list.
Exactly.
I love your Tempranillo. Actually, you know what? This is funny because all except for one wine club membership we have ever joined has been because of a Tempranillo.
Oh, really?
Yep. Really.
Wow.
Isn't that funny?
Maybe it's a Latino in your blood.
I think it's a Latino.
Uh-huh.
Okay, everyone's thinking about me. Okay, so we're going to bounce right into what it is to be socially savvy, brought to you by Sweet Talk Wipes. Like our hands, our cell phones need to be regularly cleaned and detoxified. Order yours today at www.sweettalkwipes.com. We're beginning the socially savvy, glass savvy part of our show. We're going to be chatting about the different wine glasses. And most people, they show up to a restaurant and they drink wine out of whatever glass they give you. But those who are wine connoisseurs recognize that there are different shaped wine glasses. Some of them, if I understand right, actually use different densities of glass for the different types of wines because just how it does this thing with wine. And so we have Jason in from Seattle Wine Exchange to go over these. You're only going over 5 wine glasses, which I'm assuming is going to take us through quite enough right there.
Wine can be drunk in any glass you want, but when you start releasing the aroma, the esters of the wine, that's where different shapes of glasses,
kick in,
right. It's a sensory when you drink wine, because you have your friends with you normally. And I'll start off with, the 5 basic ones, apart from the normal restaurant style where you get there and it looks like a wine glass. And that's
it. It looks like a wine glass. If it has wine in it, to me it looks like a wine glass.
I brought 5 different kinds, and I'll start off with like a tasting glass, which is usually you go to a wine tasting, and you get like a 2-ounce pour, which is just a little bit. Put it in the smaller glass, so it looks like you're having more. What we're looking at now is approximately a wine glass that's about 5 inches tall. It's about 2 inches wide for the glass. It's a basic standard. You'll see this at a lot of, friends' house. They're like, here, this is it.
I have 36 of those for parties.
you know. And then the next one, that's kind of one you just kind of see in general in wine tastings. Because if you put 2 ounces pour into a larger glass, it looks like you get nothing.
So the purpose behind this particular glass is to make a good visual presentation, and the top of the glass is open enough that it can aerate properly?
Yeah, oxidized.
Oxidized. Thank you.
I'll move into the champagne one, which is the traditional flute.
Which is my favorite.
Flute one. And
the idea is to keep to consume the champagne and allow the bubbles to rise up. It's an appearance. It's, you know, part of the mystique of drinking the champagne. Plus, you're not really going to swell the champagne, you know, swirl it around.
Right.
You're just going to taste it and toast. And the shape of the glass actually allows the enjoyment of the champagne all the way down to the body. And you can see the bubbles rise to the top, and it's kind of neat to hang on to and surprise your friends.
Now, I've heard that there's a couple of champagne glass makers who they do something with the glass that there is a bead of the little bubbles that comes right up from the middle. Is that
right?
Right down.
They do that. They're one of the big proponents of different size glasses, different makes of glasses, different density. Around the world, they have large seminars that talk about that. You know, as far as like, you're drinking a Pinot Noir, you're drinking a Cabernet, you're drinking a Toronto. They have different types of chases.
So, how many different types of wine glasses are out there? Do I even want to ask that question?
Different kinds. There's according to Rito, there are probably they sell 145 different styles.
Wow.
And this is before you get into their big brands and their. Lead lined or crystal.
Oh my gosh.
And then, of course, there's other winemakers, or I'm sorry, wine glass makers, they do a special process in the inside that when you swirl it, it actually oxidizes the wine. Or, you know, the way that the molecules or the bumps, the small bumps and ridges in there. That's beyond this wine geek talk, but there are those that really believe that that can change the outcome.
So kind of like some of the aerators that we purchase to put on the top of a bottle of wine, there's actually wine glasses that will do something similar?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Oh, okay. Way needed to be more than an hour long show.
I'm moving to the next one, which is the white wine glass. And when you start getting into the different sizes, white wine versus red wine, is all about the aroma. Allowing, when you swirl the wine in the glass, you're releasing the esters. And that's where you get that nice smell of citrus or prune fruits or any of those nice smoke.
Pineapple. Blueberry, yeah.
Stone.
Uh-huh.
Marshmallows. No, marshmallows.
I love it when they say things like the smell of farmyard. Yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, you do with the old world wines. It's
so funny because until you've actually smelled it,
I had two wines today, from Israel and one from Lebanon. And it smelled like it was like wet dog.
Yeah.
And one smelled like limestone.
Okay, so, I'm just going to pose a question out there. If it smells like wet dog, I haven't smelled a wet dog wine yet. I don't know if I want to drink that.
It's just part of the experience. It's just, you know, it's something that's been aged. Sometimes, you know, in those countries, the fruit gets cooked and it's part of the maturation, part of the process of the wine vinification. So
we just have to be like brave enough to venture.
I mean, it doesn't taste like, you know, I've never gone up and licked a wet dog, but that's what it smells like. So
there's certain things that when you smell it and people say, oh, this is barnyard smell.
Yeah.
As you can say, oh, this smells like green apples. Oh, there's only a certain amount of wines that smell that way.
Yeah.
You know, certain, you know, barnyard smell. Oh, certain wines from this region smell that way. And after a while, if you drink enough,
I'm working on it.
And that's the other thing, too. What you smell is your own experience. And what your own experience is your experience. And so that's not right. It's not wrong. It's just what you smell, what you taste. So.
Well, and I think, you know, part of the purpose of, like, today's show is to kind of give us an overview of, you know, what to expect when you're experienced. Because there's a lot of really new wine drinkers. There's a lot of people who really feel like they're established wine drinkers. And, you know, to be, quote-unquote, socially savvy, you want to I think to have an idea of maybe what to expect is helpful. And knowing, you know, what wine glasses are going to allow you to get that sensory input early on and start learning to identify. I have to agree with you. You know, the more wines you drink, the more you start to identify. It didn't take me very long to realize that a lot of Washington wines have that blackberry, dark cherry,
concentrated grape.
Black currant was the first one I was able to identify in wine for some reason. And it was funny because I was able to pick out the fragrances better in bigger wine glasses than I was in smaller. So that was kind of what got me to want to come to you, Jason, and talk about, you know, what is the difference between these wine glasses and how, you know, if you're a newer wine drinker, how will it benefit you to knowing what kind of wine glass? Because I know there's some restaurants where you can walk in and you can say, I would really like this kind of wine glass to go with it.
And definitely when you go, you know, the higher end restaurants, they see that and recognize that when you spend a quality dollar on a bottle of wine, they'll give you the glass that matches with it. Some wines like to be decanted, which is help oxidize the wine, where the oxygen and the wine work together and you get this nice flavor. The aerators that you're seeing now help speed up the process.
Mm-hmm.
So for a hardy wine like a Cabernet or even our Washington Syrah are very hardy. People think, oh, Syrah, that's a light grape. No, not really. They're really, really, you know, hardy, so use the larger glasses. When I move down the glasses here, I have a red wine glass, and then I have another glass that looks like a goblet. But people say, oh, it's a goblet looking because it looks like the bottom half of grape.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason is that when you got it, it's got more room to swirl the wine in, so that way it releases more of the esters and enjoyable of the wine. It's like a journey. So, like, if you have a nice Syrah or a Chateauneuf du Pape, in the beginning taste you have is going to be completely different than the last sip you have. And that's part of the enjoyment. That's part of the lure, the sexiness that makes it, this is a nice bottle of wine, paired with friends and food.
So, basically, the wine glasses, if you take the time to really learn and understand what kind of wine glasses and you want to make it an experience, particularly in a smaller party, people who have maybe some wine education or are wanting some wine education, actually having the white wine glasses can really enhance the experience for them.
And I think for the beginner, maybe you can attest to that, is that, you know, if you have two styles, just start with two. Start with a white wine and a red wine. Don't concentrate whether it's Cristal or not. Something that fits good in the hand, not too heavy, not too light, and, you know, you don't need to spend a lot of money. And then as your experience and as you move up, then you start, you know, enjoying the wine more. And it becomes part. You don't want the wine to be the focus of your friends. You want your friends to be the focus of the event.
Yeah. So, okay, I know we have a couple more wine glasses to go on to. But
oh, hold on. I accidentally poured the wrong one.
I was going to say, I think we have our next tasting.
Really
right, so.
I was really good.
It was
really good.
It was. No, I'm going to have a red wine and a cookie.
Okay, well, actually, I'm going to drop it right now. It's just a fabulous cherry. Yay, I know you'll love it. So this is our Rhone style blend. Like I said, up until 2006, we did not do anything other than a Tab and Merlot. And this was the first year we started doing Trinité, which is 44% Syrah, 31% Grenache, 25% Mourvèdre. It's from the Den Hoed Vineyards just outside of Prosser. It's going to be really light on the palate, kind of Pinot-ish style.
It dries down really quickly.
That's the wrong glass, honey.
Oh, well. What did you pour for me? What am I drinking?
You want this?
Oh, okay. Well, it tasted good.
I know. It's really good.
Well,
I was going that fast, right down really fast.
But the Grenache and the red grape.
See, she puts a glass of wine in front of me in a glass, and I'm like, okay, this looks good. Oh, and now one of the listeners is going to take my Merlot and drink it. Great. Do I get that back later?
And I'll replace it.
Okay, so, you know, here's an interesting question, because you brought the Trinité to us, and I mean, the glass that we're drinking in it, it would be what I would consider, I've done a little bit of wine studies, and after I started getting into the wine studies and drinking them in different glasses, this is the kind of glass that I just naturally gravitate towards as what I would consider my all-around red wine drinking glass.
Like a hybrid.
Yes, yes, thank you. So can you tell us a little bit about like this that we're drinking for a blend? I know, okay, Michael.
Actually, before we even start, so there's actually a technique to when you grab a glass of wine. So I'm looking at your glass of wine right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you, and a lot of people do this too. So they cup the glass in their hand.
Which keeps the
and
wine
and I
too
have
fast.
Really hot hands.
Yeah, you
so
can't
you always
do
want to
that.
Grab it by the stem.
Yeah.
And people go right into the swirl.
I sniff it.
Sniff it first.
And then swirl.
No. Yeah. And then try it first.
Oh, really?
So you want to try it, see if it needs to open up.
Oh.
It's too tight. And this kind of gauges, you know, okay, how early do I need to pour this or decant this? Sometimes it's really good. And then you try it, then swirl it, and smell it again. You'll get a different profile because now you're getting oxidation into it. You're getting the fruit is starting to ripen out.
Juicy. Oh, I like
just
that.
For those
I forgot how much I like that.
Those lay listeners, when he says tight, then it's not very aromatic because when you loosen it up, it's very bouquet.
So you're basically saying when you use the word tight, you're saying the first time you swirl it, you're not getting a whole lot. Once it gets a chance to aerate a little bit, then the aroma, like a bouquet of flowers, just kind of overwhelmed. Right. Not, we're not
look,
overwhelmed, but
take a look at the color of that. You know, it's like
nice cherry. It's beautiful
color. And there's actually an anatomy to this. There's a core, and that's what's in the middle there. And it's most people would say that's pretty reflective, but it's also, you know, the ruby color, almost blue. Actually a little blue in there. Maybe
it's that's a blue red.
But the core.
I love it.
Well, and then if you look on the outside, you have the quarter rim, and that's really it's almost a strawberry color.
Uh-huh.
So. And then you kind of run around your glass and see what kind of tears you got. They'll tell you how hot the wine is sometimes.
It's got some really pretty legs. It has. I
but,
know that. It's what I like so much about this one. And so while we're sipping it, please tell us about it. It's very juicy.
It is very juicy. It is. It's a little bit lighter style. It's our Rhone style blend. It's all three grapes are from the Rhone region of France. It's
cherry.
By far
I get
my
cherry.
Favorite fall wine right now.
It is.
I know.
I almost get cranberry. Am I insane?
No.
I get
no,
cherry
no,
and cranberry
no,
and
kinda,
oh, it is just
it layers.
Yeah.
This
layers.
Would be fabulous on Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
This is going to be on my table Thanksgiving Day.
And I have to tell you,
and
I have a really hard time finding a red wine for Thanksgiving. White wines are so easy, but red wines I always like have a fit over.
Well, and it's funny when I get people in my tasting room and I say, this is a really great Thanksgiving wine. It's like, oh, really? You're going to pair a red wine with turkey? And
oh, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, where have you been?
You put cranberries on a turkey?
Oh, my God.
There's a lot of mistake to say, you know, fish get white, meat get red. That's not necessarily true, especially with the variety you get here in Washington. It's like always people say, well, how do I know what I like? Go taste the wine. I mean, you come to a winery, and I'll tell this to my friends. It's like, if you taste the wine, you don't like it, it's okay to pour it out and ask for a different taste. That's why they're here. Ask them questions about what tastes good. You know, I just came back from an Argentinian wine tasting, and one of the white wines that they have, it's called Tarantas, goes really well with Thai food. People are like, oh, because you go to a Thai restaurant, they usually have the red and white, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's ask questions. Experiment. You know, Michael, you know, he's a chef too, and it's like, he'll attest it. Like, the wines, he'll be like, I had this white wine that went well with this dish, and I didn't even think it would go well. Like today, actually, for those listeners, we had some nice wasabi.
Oh my
wasabi
God!
Cheese with cheddar.
Okay,
yeah.
Oh, wasabi with horseradish cheese.
Yes.
And paired with a Riesling.
Yes. Awesome.
It was off the hook. And you know, for those listeners who are just getting into wine tasting, and you want to make a good splash, you want to do a fun little event. Have I've done this before. Have everybody. Take, you know, give them 2 to 3 weeks because it's going to take a little bit of time. Have them grab their favorite wine and then go and talk to a chef or talk to somebody in a grocery store, a deli or whatever, and pair it with a fabulous cheese or a meat or a bread, something, and bring it. Because when you pair a wine with food, your experience, especially with close friends, not only does it create a fabulous event, but the conversation that comes out of it is so fun.
Actually, you know, I like that idea. But all you have to do is grab your favorite bottle of wine, and a couple of days ahead of time.
Start eating and drinking.
But what you do now is you write down, what do you taste, what do you smell, and based on flavor profiles, you can start building your dish around that.
Yeah.
And then now you've got a perfect turn because I taste cherry in this, you know, okay, so I'm thinking, okay, what am I do with cherries? Maybe that's in a sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I do a reduction with something else, some of the wine I'm going to serve that night. And then think of a protein and then putting all that together. And now you have this amazing dish that pairs perfectly with your meal because you had it ahead of time.
Well, and that's one of the things I think, you know, moving forward is, you know, particularly in this region, and we have listeners down in California, so of course they get to enjoy sunshine all year round. But for those of us more northern, one of the things that we really relish is when the weather gets colder, the first thing we do is we really enjoy our fall wardrobe and we start looking into our wines and foods. And for those of us who've been playing with wine, whether you're beginning or you consider yourself more of an intermediate or advanced wine drinker, being able to pair with those foods and share with your friends, I have to say one of my favorite experiences, and this is what we're going to do for my cocktail party for Halloween, is have everybody bring an hors d'oeuvre and their favorite wine, because when you pair two different wines with one single food, you have two completely different experiences, and that is so much fun.
It's definitely, to follow up on what Michael's saying, it's like, you know, people think, oh, I have to pair this wine with a filet mignon swirled with a... No, you can enjoy regular good food with a glass of wine, and you'll be amazed what you
chicken strips.
Yeah. Here's one for you. Try the next time, drink some port wine, which is a concentrated wine, with fiddle faddle.
I have never had fiddle faddle.
You've never had fiddle faddle?
Or actually, an Oloroso that has caramelline in that note to it.
Yeah,
would even be better.
Okay, you guys. Now I know what you're bringing to the cocktail party because I want to know what this tastes like now.
When you get into that, when you're in that zone, you know, the wine zone, you'll see people, like you see people at the restaurant, you know, Sideways did the same thing. We swirl these gums. Oh, I got it too far.
Yeah.
Back it down a little bit. And when you have a good one, and it tastes great.
Well, and I want to encourage our listeners, because it's funny, one of our listeners who I actually happen to be, I guess you would call related to, his definition is there's good wine and there's bad wine. And there's a lot of wine drinkers out there that there's good wine, there's bad wine, and trying to approach them to the point where they can understand and enjoy the wine. You know, maybe they're sitting next to an advanced wine drinker. How can they become a part of the experience without being, you know, that being able to taste those cherries, all that kind of thing? I mean, Michael,
experience? It goes backstage. So a lot of people know the taste, they know the smell, but they just can't think of the word.
Exactly.
So there's things called flavor wheels, and those help you put what you're trying to say on paper so you can look at it and go, oh, that's what I smell. You know, like this one.
So where would we find it?
No, once I swirl this, you know what I smell?
Online.
Shower curtain.
Wine wheel.
Shower curtain.
It's not a bad thing.
Wine wheel.
So actually, what you're saying is if you have all levels of wine drinkers, one of the things you could have at your party would be a wine wheel where everybody could pick it up and allow them to feel like they could be part of the conversation and really feel like, oh, this is the words I'm looking for. This is the flavor.
Right. Exactly. So two things that, you know, I challenge everybody to do is and you can get these flavor wheels just about anywhere. A lot of wineries. Do you guys have those here?
I don't have them. Have any here. I know Walla Walla has them. Take your own Walla Walla.
Would you be a big thing right now?
but I do know you can Google it. I've even actually seen it in the wine section at some of the grocery stores too. They're party.
Oh, and like one of our listeners just pointed out, it would be a fabulous party batter. Yeah. I love that.
And then the other thing is smell. Go to your spice rack. And open the cinnamon, open the nutmeg, open the white pepper, open the
I love that. For new wine drinkers, that is a great idea. Go in and start smelling. No, that's a really good point, because if you're new to wine and you really want, we have a ton of wine drinkers from the point of 21. At 21 years of age, they are walking in. Actually, I have to say, and it was a private party, and it was a cultural private party, so in Washington, I should say, in most places, if you're having a cultural event like a wedding or something, underage people are allowed to, you know, participate in the toast. What I was amazed with was how some of these young people who are looking forward to their you know, they're approaching their 21 really fast, how many of them were not just romance, but intoxicated by the wine.
Yes.
And learning about it. And they're not drinking it to get drunk. They're drinking it because they love the culture and everything that's wrapped up in it.
You know, when they teach you in sommelier class or, I went to culinary school and all that, they don't give you wine when you go through the wine class. They give you cranberry juice, they give you tea, and they give you grape juice. And they use those basic three to say, well, the wine is kind of cranberry-ish. It's got that dry
flavor. Wow.
Tea, you got the tannic, the tea, so that way we have a red wine like a Tempranillo.
I never would have thought of that.
Grape juice, the sugar, the thickness and the enrichment. So my wife and I, we went to New York and we had two different wines, same wine. One was from Washington, one was from New York. You can tell the Washington wine was more concentrated flavor. Same type of grape, same,
right.
Bordeaux, but different region. Oh, just a little less strong.
The temperature is how long it's in.
Oh, yeah.
On the vine, mm-hmm. Everything.
Absolutely. But, go in your kitchen. Go in your spice rack. When you're in a grocery store, in the produce section, grab the red bell peppers, the green bell peppers.
I love that idea, you guys.
And smell it, because what you're doing is you're training your olfactory to recognize what you're smelling and automatically detect when you're
now,
smelling.
Now, interestingly enough, I have to tell you, green peppers are not my favorite, but because I had cooked with them for so many years, there was one wine that when I drank it, I recognized that bell pepper scent in my nose. So that's a really good point. I love that. Love that.
And when you do it enough, you'll start getting different. You know, when you smell a Super Tuscan wine, you know it's a Super Tuscan wine just by smelling. You don't have to look nothing else. Don't have to taste and go, that's Super Tuscan, because it's got the certain aromas, certain taste.
I love it. I love it, you guys. Well, and this is one of the things. I think so many people are so intimidated by wine has become such a cultural epidemic, which, as epidemics go, I'm rooting this one is the greatest. But I think so many people are intimidated by it that if we can somehow make it more approachable and make it more attainable.
Knowledge is power. So again, going back and just training.
Do some homework.
I mean, you got it all around. You open your spice rack, start changing. You smell it. You're like, oh, that's nutmeg. I smell nutmeg. So when you have a wine that smells like nutmeg, comes to my mind. So the more you do it, the more often you smell and sniff and just smell everything in your house. And I'm serious. just smell stuff. Mushrooms.
Smell stone. Pick up some rock and smell it.
Like limestone.
Limestone.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Dirt. Yeah. Smell dirt.
Oh, I know
it
dirt.
It sounds silly, but
I have three boys. I know dirt.
In California, the monks, how they determined where a good spot to grow wine was? They went out and licked a lot of rocks.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I did not know that.
They had nothing else to do.
Maybe they had all that wine.
You do that a lot. A lot of monks, they make herbal aperitifs, liqueur out of herbs, chartreuse.
And all your soothsayers and seers and stuff, they were drinking too. There's something to the whole culture of fermented beverages. Let's just say that.
but on the topic of education, that's my favorite part about working in the tasting rooms. I'm in sales and hospitality. I run the full company, but I would never want to be pulled out of my tasting room for anything, because it's the one place where I get people that are coming in to see me and are just drinking up whatever I can give them as far as explaining the wine and pointing out those flavors. And being so close to Woodinville here in the Pacific Northwest with so many wineries around you, for the listeners in California, you have access to that. And there's lots of people that know. Just start talking and asking questions. And the more you can go and visit the tasting rooms and talk to the people that have that background, it can do wonders for your knowledge.
As you, for my clients that I tell my wine to, I get a lot of what does this go with? What does that go with? For you who's here public facing, what is the number one question that consumers ask you? What is something that if you could say something, it's like, oh, I like this wine because of that.
Peach with a bowl.
I get so many. I don't even know what the one is. You know, I get a lot of what would you pair with it? And so I've seen actually my need for
your education
to,
has
to go,
jumped because
yeah,
you've got to have
like,
that information.
I have to know this stuff.
Yeah.
And that is kind of the one thing a lot of people are really interested in, the pairing aspect of it. A lot of people are interested in the growing of the grapes. It's amazing how many people come in and, you know, I get really interesting people that come in and ask me actual questions about the growing regions, and then I get really kind of annoying people that come in and tell me about the growing regions, and they couldn't be more wrong. But, you know, I love all of them.
But, you know, you are the perfect person to actually address this to, and this is one of the things we brought up on the show before. You know, it is socially acceptable to ask questions in a wine tasting room. It's not just socially acceptable. You guys actually enjoy and look forward and wait for those questions to come.
Yeah. I absolutely love it when people come in and they're looking for that knowledge.
Education
and,
hungry.
Yeah. Exactly, and it makes me excited and reminds me why I have the education that I have.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tell my father every day, I'm like, you know, I get to work in my passion. There's nothing better than this world than getting to do that. However, it's paying back because now I'm educating others.
Yeah.
And
you went from being mentored to a mentorer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's one of the things, you know, our living in the United States, a lot of times people have a very kind of happenstance attitude about, you know, we have no culture. We you know, we're borrowed from every culture around the world. We have nothing that's our own. But the one thing I think that we really have that we can own is that we take experience and we take culture and we grab onto it. And we love to go from a mentored position to a mentorer position and share our knowledge. Whereas in some cultures, they kind of protect those secrets. They're not as willing to share. I think in the American culture, that's one of the things that I find so romancing about us is we love to go from being the mentored to the mentorer.
It's like I come from a very heavy food background and and I enjoy food and wine. And one of the things that Michael said that hit home, I'm like, you know, I never thought, I mean, I know, you know, the wine tastes like, it smells like nutmeg, smells like white pepper, green pepper. To actually sit there and say, you know what? I am going to go back to my spice rack and kind of smell and go, oh, you know.
I like that idea.
I like that
love
idea.
That
I'm
idea.
I'm going to feel it. I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, we're totally going to feel it.
I've actually made a party out of it. At the Curie.
Oh, let's do a party. Okay, we're going to do a socially savvy party. I love this.
Michael,
you're fabulous.
You use some wines and you use some, and you just take some herbs and what have you, little cups, and you blindfold the person and they have to try and guess what it is.
Nice.
So it's a lot of fun.
Excellent, Michael.
Well, and that's the thing. I think, you know, wine. And of course, I'm very partial to Washington wine, but when I first started drinking wine, California wines were all the rage. And for a while there, I thought I was being kind of, what's the word? Not partial, but more so than that. I can't think of the word. Anyway, in drinking Washington wines and then drinking Australian and biased, thank you. I thought I was being biased for a while, but Washington as a region actually mimics regions across the world in one state. If you take a look at, you've got the desert on the one side, you've got all, I mean, from the northern to the southern part of Washington, we really do embrace some of the best that the world has to offer. So for a Washington wine drinker, if you're going out there and you're tasting different Washington wines, you really are getting what I would consider a teaser to what the rest of the world has to offer.
And wine grapes, wine making styles,
the culture behind it, the passion behind it.
We had a wine tasting I went to, and I was drinking the guy's wine, and I'm like, so, oh my God, so where are you from? Washington. This tastes like a French wine.
Yeah.
You know, it's the style. But the important thing to notice, and especially I'm sure Brooke can attest, is that when the family's behind it, you have a story, and you understand it, there's a little bit more passion behind it. There's a little more love in the wine.
Well, and that's one of the other things I was going to bring up is Washington wines. I really feel that they're not just romance, that we are impassioned by them. The people who make the wines, every wine sponsor of Socially Savvy, the winemakers have been impassioned by their wines. They live, they breathe at every moment of every day. And it's not because they're crazy. It's because that they really, truly...
Some of them are.
I've talked to a few of them. I went to the gala event. There's a little woo-hoo. But I think, you know, if you really want to look at being a part of something and learning about something that has a heavy root in culture and in passion, you're not wine, definitely. In wine.
Not only that, but, you know, as far as varietals go,
we rock it.
But the thing about it is most of the wines that we have and enjoy for a while, I mean, we're only about maybe 5% of what's out there in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, there are wines out there that I'm still discovering, and I'm taking classes. And I would have never guessed that, you know, I would have never heard of that. And then tried it, and it's like, wow, it's amazing. And so there's so many, I mean, it's thousands.
The varietals alone.
If you just stick with Washington, there's over 640 wineries, and then you take that, you start doing blends of different grapes.
Oh,
every time I go to a wine tasting, you know, where people blend different things, like, oh, you know,
I love blending.
Did this with this with this, and they're like, oh, I didn't even know that. Oh, and I added French oak and American oak.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Such up and a half, you know.
So I guess the one thing to say, before we, you know, we've got a couple more glasses we're going to talk about the wines, but the one thing I can say to the listeners is, you know, allow yourself to be romanced by the wine. Allow yourself to be entranced by it. And whatever you're comfortable with, whether it be, you know, figuring out what two or three different wine glasses look like for a couple of bottles of wine, pulling out your spice rack. There's so much fun that you can create at a great girls' night. Maybe your book club is coming over, or maybe it's just, you know, four or five girlfriends getting together, or maybe it's the guys getting together and they're bored with beer. I mean, there is so much that you can really get from wine and create something that is, I would guess, more of a hybrid event where you can click into that little bit of the intellectual without going over the top and getting into divulging and talking about and pulling people out of their shell to talk about and be a part of something. And the best events, and hands down, everybody will ever say that the best events are when you can get everybody involved. And wine, I think, hands down, gives you that capacity.
The second thing is, wherever you buy your wine, don't be afraid to ask questions. There's usually, unless it's midnight, there's usually a wine shooting around asking questions. I'm looking for wine for this. Don't be afraid. Read the place cards on the shelf. You don't have to be a super wine expert to enjoy wine, but you should at least ask questions, especially for those guys out there who don't know what to order. Ask questions. It's okay.
Yeah.
Not only that, but if you're out and you're touring wine countries, even here in Washington, Yakima Valley, and you love a wine, get out to the local farmer's market and buy the local cheese, buy the local the rule of thumb is if it goes together, it grows together.
That's very true.
So,
I would not have thought about that.
You know, a lot of stuff like Laurel, who does the goat cheese with the herb and all that. If you buy her cheese and then buy the wine that's grown right next to where she grazes the sheep grazes, it's like you get the same herbals that come through on the wine. It's in the cheese. It's also, you know, the same citrus, the same everything. It's just amazing.
It blends really
you're
well.
Talking about, you know, perfect pairing.
Yeah. Well, and there's, you know, for those of you who are looking at creating special events, there are a few choice bakeries and bakers, Diana's Delights being one of the leading bakers in the area that I really feel like she will take a bottle of wine and she will pair it and make these amazing cake balls.
Oh my God.
It's like there are no words.
Where are the cake balls?
So within your culture, I know where it is, Diana. But so within your own little community, there are so many resources if you want to. You know, wine is one of those things that you can take and you can make keep it very simple and very elegant, or you can take it to the depth by cooking with it and baking with it and preparing and sautéing. You know, it's just my favorite, really, truly.
Here's the thing about, you know, as a chef, and you, Michael, to help me out on this, is that when people sauté and they got a little white wine and they want to splash their shrimp on it, they tend to grab the cheap wine. They got a box full of wine. Like, it's okay. The wine that you put in your food should be as good as
the wine you're drinking. Yeah.
I see this on the cooking wine. Please, those listeners, please, drink quality wine, eat quality wine.
You know, I have to tell my listeners.
If you're not willing to drink it, don't cook with it.
I have to tell my listeners, you know, if here's the thing is I have lots of wine, which because I'm a wine fanatic. If I open a bottle of wine and it is not what I would consider drinkable, I will cook with it. But I cook with it on what I would consider simple cooking. If you're going to prepare something like souvlaki, which is a traditional Greek dish where you're marinating it in lamb for 24 to 48 hours with the proper herbs and you're serving it, if you're going to do something like that where it's an actual presentation, you're right. You really do want to make sure that that wine is paired with what you're going to be drinking that night.
Yeah, if whatever you don't like in that wine and you want to eat some cookie, guess what? That's also going to go on your food.
Amen.
So what are we supposed to do with the wine that doesn't quite, you know, all of a sudden...
Take it back
and throw it out.
Take it back.
Okay, well, so moving on.
Don't get the wine next to the vinegar.
Martha's Church doesn't make vinegar.
Well, and that's the thing is I've used the wine for replacing vinegar. If it's
does anybody know what the recipe for vinegar is?
I actually think the grape vinegars you have to have a culture for.
Now, what's the ratio to oil?
I love this. We need to give our listener a mic.
some do three to, you do 3 to 1?
I do 3 to 1.
I do 4 to 1, and I'll tell you why. Because if you have too much vinegar in your dressing, it's going to overpower your wine.
Oh, we're talking oil and vinegar dressing. I'm talking like vinegars have a culture, like some
wine. Oh, yeah, like when you're dipping vinegar and oils for...
No, and
vinegar.
Then you have the bad wine.
You and you cook
it
into it.
And then you set your vinegar under your sink or whatever for...
Right.
Okay, so we have this fabulous listener who's getting much more complicated with her bad wine than I would. I absolutely love you, Valerie.
You know, the 3 to 1, we're talking oil to vinegar.
Oil to vinegar.
Keep in mind that if you add citrus to it, like lemon juice, that's part of the ratio.
The ratio. Yeah. Which, in Greek cooking, you do a lot of lemon juice. You do a lot of oregano.
You can add mustard to it. It's part of
the ratio. You have to back it off.
And acid is an acid.
I love it. Okay, so Mr. Jason, walk it. No, we're not going to have a 70s wine tasting party. So tell us about the last two wine glasses.
The last two wine glasses are considered red.
My favorite.
By red. And you have, they're both, I'm looking at two glasses approximately 8 inches tall. You're going to see these mostly in restaurants. Both have a similar bowl-shaped feature. One looks like a traditional... kind of an orange base with a narrow top, and the other one is kind of a goblet style that looks like a half of the grapefruit, so it's kind of a big bowl.
See, I look at one that's elongated, the other one reminds me of a bumblebee.
It's been a while actually since I've taken took the anatomy of what the glasses are. Now, the top is that the crown?
That is the crown.
And then what's the rest of it? I forgot.
The crown, the bowl, the stem, and the base. The bowl is which allows you to swirl the wine around, which releases the aroma. The esters is the technical term, but it's the aroma, which is oxidized, which is allow air to touch the juice of the grape, you know, the wine.
So on a quick side note, what wines do you typically not want to over aerate?
It depends.
Yeah.
It really does. It's not like a red or a white wine.
There are some red wines you open up and it's like...
Oh, hell
15%
yeah.
alcohol, and you have to let that breathe, and you need a lot of surface area for that. Or it's an old world wine that's been
sitting for
50
years.
Chugged Up the Pop is one of those wines, you want to aerate that, and it's a roller coaster of flavors. You start off with a Bonyard flavor, Bonyard, you know, smell, and it goes up to a fruit bomb, and it comes back down to some straw, a little mushroom, and it goes back. It's that experience I talked about earlier. So traditionally, you want to do a hearty wine in the bulbous goblet wine, which is
looks like a tulip.
Yes. Oh, excellent. And then the regular wine, you just want to do a regular, you know, you're small on that.
So your blends would do better in elongated because you have so many different factors going on. Okay.
Can I give the novice role?
Oh, no, I love this.
For aerating?
Okay, so we have one of our listeners who's going to give us the novice role. I love this.
The more delicate the red wine grape, you probably don't want to aerate.
Right.
You don't want to be bruising your Pinot Noir. you can take a really heavy, robust wine and aerate it. That's my rule. I saw it, and it works really well.
So if somebody gave you a bottle of red and you sat it for 20 years at your wedding and you decide you're going to pop it for your 20th anniversary, you just want to open it and start drinking it.
And decant it.
And decant it. Okay.
Decant it is kind of like swirling, but not. It's kind of like you open up the wine. And you pour it in those nice decanters.
Allows all the sediment stuff to settle to the bottom.
Can you explain the difference between decanting and aerating?
Oh, thank you. I love that. No, that's wonderful.
Now I got to think. So, I'm going to leave Michael to help me with this. So aerating is an increased oxidation of the wine where more oxygen reaches the wine quicker, whereas decanting allows the wine to settle with the oxygen outside of the bottle.
And okay, so as I understand it, if you're oxygenizing a wine, you're hitting more oxygen is hitting more surface of the wine than not.
Yes.
Okay.
There's time. How much time do you have? Are you that person that like, oh my God, I gotta like open this bottle of wine and drink it in like 10 minutes?
That'd be me.
Or if you're someone who likes to like decant it, you know, get that out of the way and then
on
get
a great evening,
dirt,
yeah,
putting your dirt together, yeah, then that's perfect. It's like taking a bite out of an apple. Only that little section is gonna get brown versus if you cut it in fours.
Oh my God, that is great. Okay, so say that again.
Yeah.
So on an apple.
That again.
That whole thing about the wine. I'm so sorry you're cooking you.
What?
He's making fun of me. No, I think actually that clicked for me. So when you cut it up.
Yeah, so when you pour it in a decanter, there's only a smaller surface area that's getting oxygen versus where you're pouring it through oxygen. You're forcing that oxygen to interact with the molecules in the wine.
Oh,
and it changes the molecular structure that gives it. It's like it's just ripening fruit. If you've like left cup fruit out on the counter for like a day and you come into the kitchen, you're like, you smell like, you know, 20 feet away.
Yeah.
Right.
It's the same thing. As fruit oxidizes, it gives out more flavor, more
it's kind of like for you, the Latino in you, it's kind of like
that's
guacamole.
Why I like the champanillo.
Yes, champanillo. When you make guacamole.
Okay, guacamole is not a good.
Oh, yeah. Okay, it's like having pico de gallo. When you first have it, it's very tomato, very onion. If you let it sit for
24 hours,
it's
delicious. Okay.
But keep in mind, though, when we drink wine, if you like the elegance of drinking it, when you put it in a decanter, it's nice. It's so, look at the
wine. It's also a very elegant presentation, number one. And number two, I think you're right. If you have a wine that maybe isn't as old or, you know, is a rather young wine, correct me if I'm wrong, you lose nothing in decanting it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought.
You know, you don't have to decant every wine. You don't have to aerate every wine. And as you enjoy the wine, then you start knowing. And as what our listener over here said, when the delicate wine is, that's why white wine glasses are a little longer and a little...
So they're not exposed as quickly.
It's delicate because a white wine, you want to smell the apricots. You want to smell those daisies. You want to smell those green pepper. Whatever the smell of the wine is, that's the delicateness of it. Where if you start aerating it, you lose it.
That's why your crown. That's why your crown is smaller because
it's not allowing so much to come out.
Those aromas in one area.
In one area. Okay.
So I have a nice socially savvy dinner party tip.
I love this. I love our listeners. Okay. Hold on. You've got to get a mic. Hold on. Wait. You've got to get a mic.
I will often, when I'm setting the table for dinner, which is 2 or 3 hours ahead of dinner, pour everyone's red wine.
Oh, I love that.
And then you don't have to pour it at dinner. You don't have to worry about decanting. You don't have to worry about opening it. And it sits open, and it opens up beautifully. And usually
it makes a beautiful presentation on the table, too.
And also, when people go in to sit down, even if you're opening other wines or they have their wine glasses, their red is there. And it's lovely. It's a nice.
No, I like that. That's a very elegant.
It's a great way to open up a wine, too, especially depending on the type of glass.
Yes.
If you are a particular host where you're the one who is making the food and presenting the food and also trying to host and enjoy it, that's a great way of being prepared so then you can continue enjoying. You've already got it taken care of. You can move on to the different courses and not feel like you're overwhelmed.
Definitely.
Love that. Love it. Okay, so Jason, tell us real quick. We're going to be heading on to the socially acceptable and unacceptable. One of the things I did want to touch about, it is socially acceptable, and this is brought to you by Cascade Ice. Only 2 calories. Love them. It is acceptable to drink wine out of any cup.
It is.
Long gone are the days of being pretentious.
Yes.
yes, the wine glass, and you know what we talked about today about the different wine glasses having different effects on the wine. Yeah, they do have an impact, but if you drink wine out of a plastic cup, out of a paper cup, there are people, and I have to say I'm one of them, I have a hard time drinking it out of plastic cup, but you can. It's not socially unacceptable anymore because the pretense has gone away.
It's a table wine. There are different qualities of wine that you have. As we enjoy this wine today, you drink this out of a white wine glass.
Uh-huh.
There are some wines that are just table wines. They're not bad. They're not good. They're okay. I have a notorious small little jelly jar that I drink my wine out, and my wife gets so mad at me. It's like,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But, you know, when Sideways, the movie, he drank a very nice bottle of wine in a plastic cup.
That was a very strange movie to watch.
Yes. It was neat.
Well, in the whole movie, he was like, I don't like Pinot Noir, but...
No, he wasn't.
No,
he loved Pinot Noir.
That's what it was. But there was a varietal.
Right,
they had a varietal that actually had Merlot in it. So it was like,
speaking of Merlot, that's
speaking
our
Merlot,
final segue.
Oh,
yeah, I love that.
Really
all about the segue. We love it. And actually, Sideways as a movie was a continual segue.
So this is our 05 Merlot. This is one of the Walla Walla Valley Merlots. The grapes are coming from Seven Hills and Pepperbridge Vineyards. And can I just say that, speaking of Sideways, that movie literally killed the Merlot industry. And
this is so sad.
Every single person that comes into the tasting room that says, didn't you just love that movie?
No, I did not.
And
you know, it's sad that people can get so caught up in a movie that they would actually tank on something. Because I drink this Merlot, and it has a fantastic nose and a great flavor. And what I actually like so much about it is that it's gone.
Yeah.
It doesn't over-linger. It doesn't. It's one of those wines that you could drink, and it's not going to overcompensate or over, what's the word, overbear a food.
That's the thing is, like, you know, you got to remember, though, when the movie Sideways came out to where we are now, the wine industry has grown,
boomed.
The variety has grown, the uses of food has grown. When I was in culinary way back when, at 15 years old, the big thing was sun-dried tomatoes. And now we're looking at, you know, molecular gastronomy where they're taking olives and, you know, adding acetate.
We're having way too much fun.
My guy doesn't like it. He's like, no, I'm a purist.
He's like, give it to me straight.
Honey,
you have to turn the mic on.
And,
Michael. This. Michael.
Hello.
This is what happens after the third tasting. Michael's been turned on.
Wow.
Oh, Michael, we love you.
No, it's just like the whole liquid nitrogen, and, you know, I'm going to make a pinwheel out of, you know, glasses put it on a bed of flowers or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't get confident. I guess the one thing you tell us, especially
happy listeners,
is
going to say about Merlot.
Okay,
about Merlot, no matter who loves it, who doesn't love it, anyone who's honest about their cellar, it's the wine that disappears at first. It's an accessible red.
It's very easy
people
to drink.
People learning
very
to drink true. Red,
yeah.
Drink it first. And I will tell you, at my house, it disappears first. Not my favorite red, because what most people do is
your very approachable.
Red, it disappears first. And I have to say, it is an amazing, amazing wine. And when we're talking about going to other regions, one of my personal favorites is drinking French Merlots.
Well, you know, they didn't start out right.
I know. So all I'm saying
we
is,
hate to admit
it's
that.
Like new wine drinkers, new to red, I would drink Washington Merlot.
Yeah,
hands down, always.
I think Washington has done a great job of taking the different varietals and really not. The one thing I have to say about Washington wines is I don't feel like we went into competition with the French. I feel like we went into it looking at it from a fresh, new perspective, going, what more can we show from each varietal? And I really. How do we experience the full range of what this particular grape has to offer? And from that, the culture has just bloomed and grown.
I've always said that within the wine industry, we are within competition with anyone. It's that we are here just to prove that we're worthy.
Yeah,
and,
I would agree.
Ultimately, that we can do this well.
So we're going to be going into an after show, of course, because we're talking about Washington Wines. But before we go into the after show, I want to do a quick thank you to our sponsors, Petite Creek Cellars here in Woodinville, Seattle Wine Exchange, Pop Chips, Pap Smear, Hawk Wipes, Bellevue Nordstrom's Cosmetics, Eye Candy Lash Boutique, Cascade Ice, and Black Bottle Postern as some of our socially savvy sponsors. For all of our fans, be sure to like us on Facebook page, and you'll be entered into a drawing at the end of the month for our prizes, which typically include some fabulous bottles of wine. So we announce it at the beginning of the month, so good luck. Go to facebook.com homepage for socially savvy if you become a listener. Also, we are going to be going into the after party, so we're going to touch base with some more things, have a little bit more fun. We'll go off live broadcast. You can pop back in and listen to it at any time. And we're still, you know, happy to take your phone call, so you know what the phone number is. All right, so tell us a little bit about this last wine that we drank and what is in it and what is
it. So this really is the Merlot. This is our 05 Merlot.
The one that I loved in the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. The one that you were like, oh, my God. It is
100%.
It's 3% cab. It's not quite 100. Really, we needed that cab just to
give it the boost.
Actually, I don't even think it did much. It was 3%, really. I thought there was like, yeah, 3%, that's going to make a huge difference. But it's all Walla Walla Valley, and that's what really makes this wine special. To me, specifically, you know, people talk about Merlots, and there's the beginner red wine, you know, and they really are in some cases, but those, I think, are very kind of reserved Merlots. And the Merlots that are coming out of Walla Walla Valley can kick your butt in a heartbeat.
They're very complicated.
I mean, yeah,
I love
they
that.
Are.
I really do.
And I love that about that region. And I can't tell you how many times in a tasting room I've had, not just this tasting room, but others, that I've had people walk in and go, I really don't care for Merlot. And I go, but you haven't had my Merlot.
Okay, you know, and I have to say that that's, I find that very atypical of Washington wines, because that's how I felt about Chardonnay.
Right. And didn't I tell you you haven't had my Chardonnay?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Yeah, and what was your reaction to that?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we have to keep in mind, too, is that just because you don't like a particular varietal out of a certain region doesn't mean you don't like all of them all over the world.
Exactly.
No, that's
so
actually
that's
a good point.
Yeah.
That's why I tell people, take the wine and taste it. If you don't like it, you can pour it out, but still taste it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a really, I think you make a good point for, you know, taking a couple of friends and going wine tasting. And one of the notes, and I was going to run this by you, I think one of the good strategies is if you want to try lots of wines and you want to get into this, really, honestly, don't hit more than 3 or 4 wine tasting rooms in a day.
Oh, goodness, no.
Because you are going to be so...
And don't do the distilleries on the same day.
Oh, yeah. No, wine
distilleries
on the same day. Yeah.
Don't mix your alcohol.
Yeah.
Seriously, because I honestly don't want to see you after your distillery, as much as I love the distillery.
I know, and you have one right next to you.
I know. He's speaking from experience.
Oh, my gosh.
You can't taste anything.
It
kills really,
it. It
not about... To me, I want to make sure that you're getting the full
best experience, yeah,
and the best experience. And I don't want to sound like a snob or anything, but
that's not being
I
a wine snob. That's the thing. But no, I don't think that's being a wine snob. I think understanding if you're going to go out and you're going to taste wines, taste wines. If you're going to go out and taste distilled drinks, taste distilled
exactly.
drinks. There's a
do
everything huge together. Difference. Michael,
I disagree with that.
Really?
I'm sorry, I have done it. And for somebody who's immature in their wine tasting, when I went over and tasted, I was done. My taste buds were like,
people don't spit. Like, as a wine professional, when I go to wine tasting, we swirl, we sip.
Okay, but most wine tasters don't spit. So let's just put that out there.
I'm gonna side with Michael on this one.
I'm so
overwhelmed. I would say start with your lighter wines, your white wines first, then go to your heavy reds, dessert, ports. That would be my direction I would recommend.
Okay.
Youngest to oldest, drier to sweet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, you know, and I've taken food pairing classes, you know, and you can have a cocktail for dinner.
Oh, I
think
that's fine.
I can't, but I'm saying when you're out tasting.
But I want listeners to think I can never have a cocktail before.
Oh, no, I would agree with that. Because
I'm just saying what you're saying is wrong. I'm just saying that.
I agree
can,
with you, Michael.
And in a lot of cases, you can even have, and I've done this, you can have a martini as a break in between meals.
I've done started with a mixed drink and then gone on to a white, bounced to a bubbly, and ended with a bread.
See, that's the thing though, it's a mixed drink. When you go to the tasting room, you're tasting
the pure grain
whiskey. Not that they're not good, they're excellent.
They just have a tendency to overpower.
But it is still enough to
very overpowering.
Enough that really, once you get into a tasting room, you're not tasting anything.
Not really.
You're done. Essentially, I've had people that decide to start at the distilleries in the day, and I'm like, why? And if you really are dying to do that, end with the distilleries. Because not only have you gotten all of the fun of the wineries and all of that, but now you really get to have fun in the distilleries. And there's an art to the distilleries. And a lot of them around here.
It doesn't hurt that you're sitting next to a grappa distillery.
I know. And I love them. I really do. Soft sounds fantastic.
Listen to your friends. When you go to a winery to taste, the person behind the counter is your friend, and if they're really good at it, like, I love talking to her. We've had great
awesome.
Time today.
I know.
We're going to spend an hour here, you know, tasting
wine.
Easily. Versus those you go there, and you're like, yeah, this is our son, Summerlo. This is our son, Summerlo.
There's
this
no
wine.
Education. There's
right.
No fun. Yeah.
It's not fun anymore. And then that's where you get those one friends who really aren't in the wine, who just kind of tag along with you just so they appease you.
Right.
So if you find the wineries that are good,
I have to say my husband, he's so cute. There's two kinds of wine. There's good wine and there's bad wine. Pick me.
You know, right.
They're the fun ones.
They are.
Well, but you know, the great thing about it is interestingly enough, for those people who are going out and they're that wine drinker, they're that wine, it's either good or it's bad. Interestingly enough, in a group of wine drinkers, when they say it's good, they're like, oh my God, this is so good. They are the most fun in the wine tasting.
Exactly. Yeah.
You have to get those groups of friends. There's been a lot of times that we'll go to wine tasting, and the friends that come along are like, yeah, all right. And they're disinterested. They're over there in the corner looking at the wall and the painting. You know, here I am, like, oh, I'm swirling. I'm like, oh, this is really nice, you know? You have to know your friends, too.
Yeah.
You have to know your friends. And you know, I think the cool thing about wine tasting is you can be, it's not a demographic, it's not an age group, and it's not even an experience. You can have a very advanced wine tasting person with somebody who's just starting out. And if you do, the only thing that I encourage people is do a little research on the tasting rooms if you know you've got a mixed demographic and mixed group. If you know that you've got some very young wine connoisseurs, people who are wanting to get into it or are just starting out, make sure you take them to wine tasting rooms where the people behind the counter are like Brooke, where they're romanced by tasting, where they want to share the experience, where they want to make it good for everybody from what I would consider the kindergartner wine drinker to the, I have a BA and an NBA, BC, QRSG in wine.
That leads me to the next thing I want to touch briefly to you about your social savvy. Last week we talked about socially savvy on, say, Facebook or your events. And we talked about where people, you put out an event, and they say, yeah, I'll be there, yeah, I'm happy.
Oh, yeah.
And then they show up. So this was a big topic on the Facebook page the last couple of days about don't be a Facebook flake.
Yeah, if you're going to RSVP true. If you're a maybe, you know what, we're totally cool with a maybe.
Yeah, it's okay to say no. From other people I heard that this has become a bigger and bigger issue where people are tired of saying, you know, oh, you said you're going to come and you don't show. And I opened that extra bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And you didn't go.
Well, it's like, you know, here, this actually, you open up a perfect entourage. But what happened with me is I RSVP'd yes to an event. And at 3:00 in the afternoon, I realized I was not going to make it. So I notified the host of the event that, you know, barring a miracle, I was not going to be able to make the event. It was really hard for me not to make the event. But in letting them know, they now knew that they were going to be two people less, so they did not open that extra bottle of wine. They did not buy that extra, you know, 6 ounces of food or whatever. There's a basic respect that goes along with understanding. When somebody is putting on an event, whether it be a wine tasting or a dinner party or a barbecue, even a potluck, people are very aware of who's showing up. And if you, like for me, I have a family recipe for a garlic dip that goes back, you know, 65 years. when I bring it, I make sure that there is enough for everybody. Well, if 20 people decide they're not going to show up, if I know ahead of time, I won't overmake that.
And it's important because the word that you spoke, that was really a big talk this last couple of weeks. And it's, you know, don't be a Facebook player. So
well,
say no.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is we need to make sure that people realize that it is okay to say no and we're not going to make it. And you know, one of the things I've noticed the last couple of weeks since we did that show here a couple of weeks ago was people are now saying, you know, I really wish I could make it. I'm sorry. And blah, blah, blah. You know what? I really respect that because there are literally, but for somebody like me with the Socially Savvy Show, I get at any given time, I have over 75 invites to events. I would love, I mean, can I tell you how much I would love to make all those events? I have a husband, I have a family, I have things that are a part of my life that I choose to make a part of my life. And sometimes you have to make a choice, whether it be easy or tough. Still, you know, again, I'm a big ad, I say maybe a lot. And I will follow it up with a note. If I can make this work, I will totally be there. I support what you're doing. If I can't make it, I'm sorry. You know, understand that people's time is worth something and their resources. When you open a bottle of wine, that's a resource. And it's, you know, we're talking juice here. Hello. We have, you know, this is what makes the after party so spectacular. Like when you show up, I was just saying, when you show up for a Socially Savvy event and you're part of the after party, you get these teasers of things that other people don't get to enjoy. So, Brooke, tell us a little bit about this beautiful, just luscious juice in front of us.
This is the one wine that I will actually say is haunting.
Oh my God,
it will
beautiful.
Literally haunt you until I can't figure out when to stop.
It's like
I'm being actually encouraged by a listener to say it's better than Sex in a Glass.
It's very
really,
sexy.
It really is
a very sexy
it's
wine.
Better than sex.
It really is.
Honestly.
I wouldn't say it's better. It's a great prelude.
I don't know if it's better than.
I think it's
maybe
a great prelude. Michael.
Just looking at it.
This is our 09 Sagemore Vineyards Ice Wine Sauvignon.
It has the legs of a burlesque dancer.
Oh my God. This gets better and better. Really?
I wish Lily Verlaine was here because she would be oohing and aahing over this.
Oh, yeah.
This is, you know, and maybe someone can correct me if I'm wrong, to be an ice wine, it has to be 18 degrees minimum, maximum. 18 degrees maximum, whatever I'm trying to say.
This is the fourth tasting here.
Early morning.
Early morning.
You get
I would
the
think
dew,
it would
you
be,
the
yeah.
fog, it's set
but
down.
But 18 degrees at the most. Below 18 degrees for 48 hours.
Wow.
Ultimately, that's what I'm trying to say.
It's very dense and very,
it's very dense.
Succulent.
When they picked these grapes, it was 9 degrees. And keep in mind, Sagemore Vineyards is in Pasco, Washington. It's just outside of the Tri-Cities. It is technically a desert. And that doesn't happen that very often. This is the third time in 37 years.
This is a phenomenal glass of wine.
So there's two things when you talk about ice wine.
Right.
So there are naturally occurring ice wines, and then there are cryogenically produced ice wines.
This is a naturally occurring.
Okay.
Can we just make sure that we explain that this is a natural occurring? Because
now, there are three.
This weekend I had a very long talk with someone about the cryogenically.
Well, like you said, there's some reason that
one
of
the grapes and they stay on the vine until because that's really important.
So when it freezes,
before it freezes, they've been on forever.
Yes, so the longer the growing season, the more of the sugars that develop in the grape and less the acid to come out.
And
so,
the mold.
And so,
a healthy mold.
Yeah, so what happens is when it freezes, the waters that what's left behind is the sugars in the grape. So when it's pressed, you take a lot of grapes to produce this ice wine. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but typically, winemakers don't make a lot of money on this. It's more of a pride thing that it's kind of about
this is your pride and joy.
I hate to say it. This is an expensive wine in our tasting room.
I'm sorry, in your tasting room, it is not an expensive wine across the board.
At
$55, this is not an expensive wine across the board.
$59 compared to everything else that I have, where we try to keep everything under 30 at the moment. This is $59 for a half bottle of wine. I can't tell you how many times I see people going, oh, never mind, I really don't want that bottle. But what they don't understand is that this is
an
honor for us to have made.
Yeah.
And like you said,
yeah,
it's expensive.
It's expensive, but typically, I mean, normally, the winery doesn't make any money on it.
No, and that's one thing we don't.
If you frame up how many grapes it takes to make that little bottle, then they understand.
Right. And, you know, I think that one thing in my tasting room, I'm very big on showing the vineyard, showing pictures of what we go through.
I know, I got to see those today.
It's so far away from the tasting room, or from the production.
Production, right.
That it's really important. So I actually have pictures of these grapes sitting on the vines, and of my winemaker standing in the snow.
That's awesome.
With a smile on his face that I'm pretty sure they had to bribe him when they took this picture. And I've always told him, the next time we ever have to make this wine, I'm standing on the sideline with a hot toddy and a camera. To document it.
You know, the thing about ice wine is you created something that is such an experience. I mean, I had a very good friend who also has another vineyard walk me through. I was going to a barbecue and I wanted to have a dessert that was exceptional. I mean, this was an exceptional group of people. And he pulled me aside and he said, this is what you do. He goes, you buy the ice wine. He goes, you take your strawberries. You've got to have at least 3 hours for this.
Yeah.
He said, you pour the ice wine on the strawberries. You let them sit for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You strain off the strawberries. You then take the shortcake and the juice that's left. You dip the shortcake into it. And he suggested the little individual shortcakes,
yes,
where you soak it in the top and then you flip it over on the bottom. You put it on the plate. You put the strawberries over the top and you finish it with whipped cream and you serve it with a side of the ice wine.
This is actually a dessert that my dad requested for his 70th birthday this weekend.
It's exceptional.
He said, can we just make that? And I looked at him and just kind of laughed and said, I only make them small scale.
Small scale.
But the other really great thing to do is to mix this into your whipped cream, which is another really great thing for Thanksgiving coming up. You know, when you make whipped cream, you need to sweeten the heavy cream.
I was used to vanilla.
Exactly. Pour this into it, and granted, the children cannot have.
No, they can. No. Well, you think culturally.
It's still alcohol.
But culturally, you're only going to get a small portion.
Okay.
And I mean, the Greeks and the Italians and stuff, we're giving our kids half a glass of wine, so what the heck?
Right, exactly. But I'm just going to cover myself. I think children. I'm going on record. But sweeten your whipped cream with this for Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. So totally doing this.
Absolutely delicious.
It's divine.
And, you know,
you
anytime
say,
whipped cream is needed, it's really
that's,
good.
That's a good idea. I really like that. But the other thing that's really cool is you can also, you know, I'm pictured just not
I want a bottle.
Pineapple in here.
Yeah.
I mean, I could just drink this with a pineapple upside down.
Right.
Like,
is there, okay, so
I'm
thinking
you know,
pineapple and
fruit with this than pineapple upside down cake.
Am I
cheese? And I'm really kind of sad and kicking myself that I didn't run to the store.
Apricots.
To get some blue cheese. Yes. In fact, I was just talking to someone today where she was talking about doing a food pairing for a party where we pair this with apricots stuffed with blue cheese. And I sat there going, wow, that just sounds really delicious to me.
Well, it's interesting because I've been having a newer... I've been trying to educate my wine palate for about 3 years, and I had to give up my wine studies because, you know, economic just like tanked. But even prunes, I get this feeling that this would be, you could, oh my gosh, really.
Well, it's an interesting point because, you know, you said blue cheese, and a lot of times, you know, you're doing like ports and
blue cheese.
It's a contrast thing. So like,
right.
Everyone loves salty, sweet. So
right.
That's kind of the exception to the rule. Where you're going to play on food brands that contrast are actually really good. So.
Okay.
Love that.
But, you know, this makes this a little lemon curd on top of cheesecake.
Ooh.
Would be wonderful.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay, a little scared. Okay, so we're going to wrap up the show with our socially savvy tips, best ways to store wine glasses. Jason and Michael, could you please tell us the best way to store wine glasses and also clean them, what not to do.
Make sure they're clean. Well, a lot of times, you know, depending on what you're doing, because some people will run their glassware through the dishwasher,
uh-huh.
and you have sediment, you
the
know,
hard
like
water.
The water spots on them.
Yeah.
And it's mineral. It's actually mineral deposits, and that will actually taint your wine.
So you're better off to hand wash them, correct?
Yes.
And then one of the things that I learned is there are certain towels that you want to dry them with, because if you go with the heavy, fluffy towels, they don't dry and they leave streaks. You want to go with a towel that is set up for drying glass.
No paper towels, they leave lint, terry cloth towels. You know, if you're going to buy the glass of wine and they're decent, get a good lint-free cloth.
Okay.
They're not too terribly expensive and it'll last long. You'll see mine here. It's got red stains and wine and use. But it leaves the glass spotless.
And that's my thing is, does that make you a wine snob if you want
no,
glass spotless?
When you take the wine, you grab the wine glass and you go to swirl it, you don't
want
to go,
you a Virgo.
Oh, there's
make
that
you a Virgo.
And, there's that orange juice stain. And, no, put it in hot water, wash it off, and let it sit air dry. Then wipe it down and put it away.
Now, that's what I do. I wash it in the hot water. I use very, very little amount of soap. Rinse it immediately with a hot water and then set it upside down to drain for about 5 to 7 minutes. And then I hand dry it with a terry cloth like that.
That's it. I mean, you don't need hundreds of, you know, wine
degrees,
glasses.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially when you go to these wine tastings and, you know, like, you know, you're going to have, like, you know, 500 people at and you got all this somewhere out there. I grab a glass and I'll smell it. It smells weird. I put it down and grab another one.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I see. That's good.
Because that'll change your whole tasting.
Have you ever noticed going to a restaurant where that has happened?
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Biggest annoyance to me is when I pick up a glass at a restaurant, smell the glass.
And it smells like
bleach. And the waiter can look at me like I'm crazy, and I hand him the glass back and go, can I get a different glass?
Oh, the glass is hot. You
yeah.
Get
no.
That, and you're like,
oh,
you're like,
oh,
oh,
yes.
Oh, and then they, I really
well, at a high-end restaurant, you actually, interestingly enough, you know, that is a good, really good tip. If your waiter looks at you confused, then you need to ask for the wine store.
Right, exactly.
Because they're not going to be able to help you with your experience, whether you're advanced or whether you're a beginner wine taster, because that's a really good point. I love that. Okay, so any totally socially unacceptable things when it comes to wine glasses? Anybody have any comments? I knew you would, Jason.
I do.
I love this.
When you're at a restaurant, you know, you're paying a certain amount of your funds, your hard work, money, and you look at the glass, and like she was saying earlier, you smell it, you know, that's one. Smell it, you know, they look at you and walk weird. That's okay.
It's socially unacceptable to have wine stains on your lip.
It's when you take the lip and you look at the lip, how many times have you had
lipstick?
Oh, it's socially unacceptable to have a lip stain mark.
Do you have a tip?
A tip? Okay.
I have a great tip.
Love this.
Ladies, I'm a lipstick wearer. Wipe your own glass.
12-hour lipstick, so it does not.
That's
not where
I wear turbo lipstick. When you're done in the evening, wipe your own glass because it'll never come off, and it's your responsibility if you want to wear that lipstick. Oh, your own makeup.
Actually, you know what? That's a really good tip.
Yeah. Wipe your lipstick off, especially like out and about, of course, but at friends' houses.
Well, because most people, again, you know, this is why we're bringing up the whole wine glasses and how to clean them properly. A lot of people have wine glasses and they throw them in the dishwasher or they don't know how to clean them properly. It doesn't take it off.
No.
You've got to hand wash them.
Definitely when I clean my glasses, I got tons of lipstick things I have to do.
I do have a tip. If you're going to a wine tasting, make sure your cologne is
no cologne.
Too heavy.
Yep, no cologne.
If at all, if you can help it, don't wear any cologne or perfume.
And wearing an outfit like you're wear red.
Something
wear
red. So you don't worry about red stains.
And if you do insist on wearing cologne or perfume, please make it something other than Vanilla Fields.
Or Flower Bomb. I love Flower Bomb.
God.
I think a lot of people.
Smaller tasting rooms, I'm sure we can all smell you.
So you know, this actually brings up a really good point. A lot of times, people really feel like their fragrance is a signature to them. Like I have a signature fragrance. Actually, I have two that blend so well with my chemistry that when I wear that, people actually make comments on it. If you're going to go wine tasting, nobody cares about your signature.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't mean to be rude about it. If you're going to go wine tasting, you have to understand this is a sensory experience, which
exactly.
means do not overrun somebody else's sensory experience with your preference.
And wineries, go through a lot of expense to make sure that happens.
Yeah.
Lighting, temperature, glassware. And if you come in and you take that sensory, that olfactory experience out of the customer's hand, now it's like, all right.
Now I'm just offended. Now it's
yeah, now I'm annoyed.
It's like, like insulting my child.
A lot of people do it out of pure ignorance.
Well, and that's why
we bring it up. That's why, you know, being socially savvy, and the one thing that we talk about is being socially savvy is by definition being aware. You don't have to have an MBA or a BA or any kind of degree. You simply have to be aware, whether it means you taking and learning, doing a little bit of education and understanding what your presence is going to do at a social event, whether it be how you wear your clothes, what fragrance you wear. Is it a wine tasting event? Don't wear fragrance. If you are going to a fashion show, don't wear hoochie clothes. You know, it's being aware.
Can I bring up...
Sorry, I had to say it. Yes, very recently. Hoochie clothes, yeah.
LB, I want to bring up something that Brooke said about only go to 4 or 5 tastings during the day.
I agree.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
I've had a lot of friends
3 to 4
with me, and they're going like, I got to pay $5? I don't want to make this about money, but I'm talking about when you pay a cover to enjoy the wine that they're providing for you.
Make sure you can remember it.
Make sure you remember it. Make sure that you enjoy it.
Yeah.
It covers the wine glass, the education, the tasting, everything else that this person's doing for you. That's why I take the time. If you're just going to go get drunk, go to the bar.
I think you make a really good point. Wine tasting fee. If a room is tasting a wine, is charging a wine tasting fee, recognize that it's not just covering the cost of the wine. These people are behind the counter. They've made sure are educated to give you the best experience.
Educated.
Yes. And you, the whole point of you being there is to take advantage of that education, and they're willing to share it. So respect it and enjoy it.
Exactly. And even when the tasting rooms are not charging a fee, keep in mind that there are a few out there that still don't charge a fee for tastings.
Yes.
Not necessarily around here, but I know that there's a few in Walla Walla and some in Lake
and
Woodville.
Well, if you mention socially savvy at quite a few of them, you'll get a free wine tasting.
Right.
Just
exactly.
Say it.
But keep in mind that, you know, just because it's free, we're not the pre-funk party. We are not the place to go.
You're there to share.
I'm there because I'm educated. I know what I'm talking about, and I want to educate you.
I'm impassioned to share my education. Yeah.
And I want to talk to you about wine, and even if you're not in a place right now, you know, financially to be able to purchase 3 or 4 bottles or even 1 bottle, at least show your respect to me and pretend like you're at least into it.
Yeah. So in other words,
don't just be there for the drug.
Yeah. 3 to 4 is my
tasting. I'm sorry, but you know the tasting fees here in Washington State are absolutely cheap.
Minimal.
And most of the time you get the feedback
the top
if you
end
buy a bottle of wine.
Exactly.
And you go to California?
No.
It's a tasting fee that's like 2 or 3 times, it's like $15 to $20.
And there's no discount.
And you don't get that back when you buy a bottle of wine.
No.
So
when you think about it, when you pay your minimal tasting fee, that's a glass of wine of good quality wine.
Oh yeah, most definitely.
Definitely.
And you're getting a chance to sample anywhere from 3 to 7 glasses of wine.
And for those listeners who are in there, if you really want to do your savings, be engaged, because sometimes the taster will go, you know what, I like you, I'll let you have
they'll pull that
nuggets.
Piece out from below the bar.
Friendly.
Hence the ice wine. The after party ice wine.
Absolutely love you.
Oh,
thank
you.
Or I actually
really
forget it. Or I'm with LB now, that's true. Or my parents are actually in the room, because that's happened before where they sit there going, can we have that ice wine?
What's that wine that in the
there's
small
this
bottle?
There's a big group of people in here, I'm like, would you shut up?
I'm not talking about that right now.
Exactly, I'm like, we don't talk about it.
That's called the backroom wine, the one that you share with those very special people. So if you want to have the access to the back door or the exclusive wine. Okay, Michael, put your eyes on it. Oh, my God. We did not change topics. You're right. I think if the more engaged you are, the more then I've seen that. I've been at several tastings where they're like, I'll go through the wines and I'll be engaging and asking them a question. They'll go, give me just a minute, and they'll bring out this special bottle and they'll talk about it.
I think that's happened in my case here with you. your route, right?
A couple, it's called the Tempranillo.
I sit there going, oh, well, there might be one more. There's a secret here.
So with that said, for those of us who do enjoy wine tasting and having people over for wine, what is the best way to store your wine glasses?
Store your wine glasses. You don't necessarily have to have those racks that shows them upside down. You can store them in your regular cabinet, but if you have a wine towel, you know, towel you have, when you have friends come over, wipe them down.
Wipe them down.
That's really what the bottom line is. I mean,
love it.
Unless you're medium, you know. Grape jelly jar, you know.
I wipe them down. I have to say, the only thing that makes me a wine snob is I like my glass beautiful.
Oh, speaking of which, when you get a wine glass, you don't get the heavy ones. Get something a little lighter. Bend, you know, a little bit warmer. Yeah, and make it a little lighter because when you, you know, it's kind of funny. You think, oh, the wine glass doesn't make nothing. When you're holding it and it's heavy, then you start putting your hand around the bowl.
And you warm the wine, and you change the temperature
right.
And the experience.
Now, sometimes...
Listen to Michael.
Sometimes, people put, the white wine in the refrigerator, and it gets too cold. So it's really tight. So
not me.
But it's kind of fun, too. You try the wine, and I'll put my hand on the bowl on purpose to warm it up, to get that fruit to open up. And then you get a completely different wine sometimes.
I think you have to have a little bit of education because I would baffle that.
I can say a lot of people might be confused by that because they're automatically thinking a white wine should be cold, where
yeah.
Someone that is...
I actually
like
prefer my white wines at the maximum temperature. I'm one of those people who prefer my white wine at the maximum temperature.
What do you red wine sometimes in the refrigerator, like 10, 15 minutes before guest comes?
Yeah.
Put it above the refrigerator. There's a lot of
above the refrigerator.
Above the microwave, fire.
Oh.
Put it down.
Well, it's okay, so when it comes to juice, and it's whether it be fragrance or wine, when it comes to juice, keep it in a dark, cool place, and you have nothing to fear. The second you add light or heat to it, you are now endangering that juice.
You don't have, until you start spending a lot of money on wine.
What's a lot of money?
Over 40.
Okay.
For me, it's over 40. You don't have to put it on its side. If you
really?
If you put it on the store and you buy it, and you're going to drink it within the next week or two.
Oh.
Come on.
there are certain wines that are put on the side. You've got sediment.
I put everything on the side.
But, if you don't have space somewhere, like if you don't, you've got the wine rack that's above the microwave. And you want to keep
it
cool. Go ahead. It's okay to put it on its bottle side. If you're really worried about it, fine. Put it on the side with some towel so it doesn't move around.
Right.
I don't know how Michael feels about it, but
over 80% of all wine purchases are consumed in 48 hours.
Nothing.
What?
Yeah.
Nothing.
That's why you don't see those.
See, I agree
people,
with you, Valerie.
But I have a great story.
I have 18 bottles of wine that have been wrapped.
Even the wine server sort of didn't taste zero?
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
In 48 hours. So when I have a couple coming in, I'm...
80%.
80%.
Oh, but that's 20% to buy 2 cases of ice wine. Yeah.
I don't think they're drinking it enough.
But not very many people come into your tasting room. I will. If I love a wine, I'll buy 2 cases, 3 cases of wine because I know that's going to carry me through.
But our culture is not that educated to save and wrap wines.
Table wine, or what have you, or good, blood acid, that's not fruit, because there are a lot of different things to throw in with over the summertime. I'm going to get through 2-3 cases of that wine. And
right.
And carry me through the 3 seasons.
So,
I was actually just talking with someone today about how when you do find a wine that you like, that you absolutely love, whether it's in a taste room or at the store, you should always buy it in threes.
Yeah.
Because then you can drink one now,
save one,
and then save the other two. One for, say, 5 years and 10 years down the road.
Well,
you have that rule too, don't you, LB?
I do. Actually, Socially Savvy has about 3 bottles.
As a listener, you should listen to
As a listener, when we go into a tasting room, we have a 3-bottle rule. If you heard us taste it on air, there was a bottle that was given to the host, there's a bottle that we give away that night, and there's a bottle that we give away at a later date.
So if you're listening to this, get your booty down here.
Yeah, because guess what? One of these listeners here gets a bottle of wine.
You should wrap wine that's going to be long-term, but 80% of the time, people grab it. When people buy wine from me, they're going to drink within the next, definitely 48
hours.
Yeah.
Well, and the racking the bottle, somebody told me, and I think it might have been you, Michael, that actually reminded me, I have 18 bottles. Well, I had several more than that, but then, you know, the economy crashed and I'm down to 18, that we bought with the intention of racking down. And because we were, I was educating myself of the old philosophy of drinking some and then letting it sit and being able to enjoy it every couple of years and really seeing how it grows and how the bodies change. One of the things that I had forgotten was how often you need to rotate, how you need to twist that wine.
Hey, Michael, would you explain about the racking? What does it mean by that?
That means what you're doing is, a lot of times what I've done is I go to vertical tastings, and they don't really do that anymore, but that gives you a sample of each year in a wine barrel, and it kind of, you can gauge, you know, it kind of has a lot of acid, is it really going to last for the next 5-6 years? It's kind of a guessing game. But you always buy it with bottles of wine, usually, typically. And then every, like, you wait, like, we guess, like, okay, this, I'm going to rack this for at least 5 years. But on year three, I'm going to open one and see how it's doing. Because no one can tell you what is happening in a bottle of wine.
Until you open it up.
Right.
Exactly. So you don't want to buy just one bottle and, like,
I would agree.
I'm going to drink this in 6 years because it could be, like, cork or it could be, like, now it's vinegar.
I've actually opened a bottle of wine that I was really looking forward to, and it went to vinegar.
That's why I always want to get, like, you know, five. Usually, I always buy six bottles.
I was going to say, I always buy six. If it's something I'm completely romanced by, I will buy six bottles.
There are two styles of wines. There are ones you drink now, ones your friends come over, and then ones for the celebration.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Right.
That
is three.
That's right. And then there's other wine drinkers that are in the room will tell you there's two kinds of good and there's bad.
And then, like, you know, Elvie said earlier, you want to keep it in a dark, cool place.
Treat it
and,
like a mushroom.
And if it's a cement, like, basement where it's got a little moisture, it's even better.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like
how often are you so one of the questions I asked is how often are you supposed to rotate the wine in the rack so that the cork stays and everything stays?
Well, you don't want the sediment to go to one side and stay there because when you go to open that up, you got this really like sludge on one side.
Yeah.
When you're turning them, you're not letting it set.
Right.
So that's typically what that does for me. I mean, there might be more to it, but that's what I know.
I've heard both sides. I've heard turn it, and then her just let it go. So that way when you pour it, you see where the sediment's actually at.
And you get to deal with it.
Pour it.
Okay.
And the other thing that I think for restaurants is a pet peeve, we talk about that, so we'll take the wine bottle and you're pouring your glass, and like, oh, you get the end, and then they
oh,
just
the
dump
sediment
it.
Is so oh, gross.
It's
like,
really?
Yeah.
You know, if you see that, it's like, you know, you're going to have a little sediment. A little
you need to talk to the manager about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of our listeners has a little tip.
If you don't have a wine cellar, buy the styrofoam coolers, put it in a dark place, put it in the coolest place in your house, and leave it alone.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then sometimes if you collect enough wine, meaning even the styrofoam coolers maybe only can hold about 8 or 9 bottles, I date them.
Oh, that's a really good idea. I like that.
Because most of us don't have wine cellars. We don't have that. And I don't rotate them. I date them. I actually think when sediment goes on one side of the bottle, it actually sometimes hardens there, so when you pour it out later, it doesn't come out.
I'm not dealing with it.
And
that's a good
I really, really like that because I actually feel personally, this is just my experience, that temperature fluctuations really affect the wine. I think light affects it as much.
Yes.
So if it's dark and it's cold, the coolest place in your house, at least styrofoam coolers, you can date them the years you want to open them. You're great.
I love that.
So for
treat
a goal,
it like a mushroom.
For a goal, maybe like you store 10 bottles a year and place it, you know, later in the years. It's really fun.
I like that. It's like a time capsule.
Yeah, it's a time capsule of wine.
Can I also just really quickly insert that not all wine is meant to be aged, whether it's red or white. Not all wine.
How do people know that?
It's going to get better with age.
So they need to ask that when they buy it.
They need to ask. They need to somehow ask someone that would know. Steward, a wine shop, you know, anyone. Get in contact with the winery. A lot of wineries, you can go to their websites nowadays.
And they'll say drink it in
3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, I've heard so many people tell me how they've bought this really big bottle and they've sat it down for years. And then they go to taste it and it's horrible. I'm like,
I have a couple of, I think we have like 5 bottles now. Years, they're optimum. I'm going to be celebrating.
Yeah, the important part. If you're going to lay it down, get the wine tax. Put down, you know, the year you're supposed to, that you want to open it, and put down the price.
That's
because
a lot
of times when you look at your friends over and you want to impress them, and you're like, are they worth the $75 or something?
Yeah.
I'm not saying to be mean. I'm just sometimes,
but
you know.
You do. You have those relatives who is like, good wine, bad wine, and they don't care.
I'm not saying
it's just wine.
An incredibly expensive bottle
for somebody
white wine for my mom when I know she's going to mix it with 7-Up.
Oh, good Lord.
That's not going to happen tonight. Yeah. I don't know where I got my wine education. That's what I grew up with. But
it also starts with the winemaker, because a winemaker, when he's making a wine, he's thinking of the consumer right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And he knows that this wine is going to be drunk before 48 hours or even 3 days. So he needs to make a wine that's good now.
Yeah.
Not 3 years,
there's a large
5 years
percentage
down the road. So, and not only that, but a lot of these up-and-coming wineries, they don't own the vineyard. They don't own the, you got mortgages.
They don't have access to the juice to sit on it.
Rent.
Yeah.
So you can't sit on wine and like, okay,
so that's actually a really good question. Is this a wine that I want to drink right away, or is it something I can sit on?
Exactly.
I think a lot of the wines coming out of Washington, a few exceptions, are drinkable now.
Yeah.
Or you can store them. So if you buy your 3-bottle rule, you can hang on to it for, 6 months here.
Just make sure you did it.
Good
right.
Wine, it's okay to drink the wine.
I agree.
There are some big names that the wines are generally ageable for the most part. I don't want to pick up a Leonetti or Woodward Canyon or Cedar Creek and drink it right now when I know for a fact that
in a few years it's going
to really
be really good.
In 20 years. I'm like, yeah, maybe I just want to hold on to that one.
Yeah.
Or, even my 05 Cabernet Sauvignon, which unfortunately, sorry guys, you guys didn't get to taste, but
it was
a reason to come back and see me.
Hello.
It's going to be even better 7 years from now, and I know that.
Yeah.
But those are few and far between wines where a lot of them, like you were saying, they're drinkable now. You need to be drinking those because they're not ageable.
And I think that's indicative of Washington wines overall.
So what's the biggest thing you look for when you're thinking about aging a wine?
And for me, I would look for price, the vineyard themselves, what kind of wines do they have, then I'll go from there.
What do you research? What do you need in the wine for it to rack?
Longevity.
Oh,
complexity.
I look at complexity
in
like Cabernet, Merlot, Syrah.
You
complexity.
Need acid. You need a lot of acid.
Acid, tannin.
Well, as it ages, actually, it starts to round off.
Right.
Acid, tannins, and huge fruit.
personal
and that also applies to white wine too. There's certain white wines, Chardonnays, that are good if they rack over the
Riesling.
Seven Blancs. What is it? There's some white wines you can rack for 100 years. So if you really want to find out whether or not it's a wine that you can rack, go to the website and do your research.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of them, there are cases where you've been able to rack red and white wines for over 100 years. And
they're
rare.
Wasn't there recently a Sauternes that was purchased by some sommelier that it was like... 115,000? Was that what it was?
It was pretty high.
It was really high.
Content.
And it was
it's the sugar content.
And now they're storing wine underwater. In Italy, they're storing some of the Italian wines underwater.
We'll get to do a little research on that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
I wonder if that's, I've never heard that, but is that salt water, I imagine?
Salt
crystal,
water, yeah.
Salt
water,
constant temperature.
They just recently came up on the wine news that I saw on,
in Italy, wine space is premium. So, we're going to put our wine. So they go, we'll put it right outside in the water.
Okay, so Jason, we're going to have you back on the show, and you need to do research on that one.
I've got it. I'll see if I can get some.
That's awesome. Okay, so we're going to round up the show because we've gone way into the after show, which I absolutely love. If you're a socially savvy listener, the best thing is to show up to the shows because you get fabulous wine tastings, and it's actually a lot of fun. The later the night goes on.
Yes.
Wanted to touch base real quick here with the social news. Oktoberfest has started, so check out your local listings for events in your area. The best beer drinking of the year is now. In our local area in particular, we have our favorite spots of the Fremont Ballard and Leavenworth. As well, yes, we know. As upcoming events this week, we have Working Women's Wednesday is at the Fab New Space, the Sweet Lounge in Bellevue for the entire month of October. Swing in from 5 to 7 p.m. for great socializing, giveaways. Check out the Fab New spot and hang with Brooke and Jubal from 92.5. the Atomic Bombshells, and we have a particular love for them because Lily Verlaine, one of our guest hosts on the show, she is a regular now. She is a burlesque dancer in this show. They are at the Triple Door for 3 days, Thursday, October 6th through the 8th. They have 7:30 shows. They have 5:30 and 10 o'clock shows on the weekends. And for $25, you can get in and watch this amazing burlesque show. If you have ever experienced a burlesque show, they are so much fun, very tantalizing and fun. Ultra Pink Lounge in Seattle is celebrating their one-year anniversary Saturday, October 8th at 9 p.m. They're going to have a special pink carpet event with a free buffet open from 9 to 10 p.m., $1 pink martinis from 9 to 10, and be fashionably sexy and fun at Seattle's premier place to CNBC. More details are coming up. For VIP table reservations, email Jimmay, J-I-M-M-A-Y, at stardustproductions.com for more information. They'll be popping that up on the website this week. Michael, you know all about our wine connection.
Our wine connection? No, I don't, actually. Where are we at? Yes, I do.
We're all very impressed by wine.
Yeah, so if you go to Woodinville, winecountry.com, /events, there's a slew of all kinds of really cool stuff that all the wineries do in this area. So I behoove you to jump on there and check out what's going on. Get down to the local events because those are a lot of fun and a lot of value. And a lot of times you can bring the family too, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I've actually brought my underage when we've come in and checked out a couple of different wine tastings, and a lot of them have things for the kids to do. Not encouraging you to show your kids how to drink and drive, but if you have a designated driver, it's
sometimes
good education.
Kids, if they're over 16,
they
can
make
a really
great
designated driver.
And the other thing is if you're, like I brought my boys, we're culturally raised with Greek and raised around wines and stuff, there is a way of teaching your children how to behave around wine. If you make a good impression, then it becomes not something to be drunk about. It becomes a cultural experience. It's awesome. Okay, we are so looking forward to Saturday, February 15th at $20 a person. That's all it takes to get in here and vote for your favorite fireman chili. Just the chili. You don't get to vote on the fireman.
Sorry, guys.
It's going to be here.
The chili.
The chili.
And the net proceeds go to benefit the Burns Foundation and it's through the Firemen's Foundation. It's really a great cause.
We're checking out the firemen in the calendar. Oh, hello.
Oh, my God. And I can just tell you that quite a few of them will be here that weekend. And really, so we're going to have a lot of things. And this is one of those things that is going to be great to bring the kids to.
And it's happening here.
It's going to be happening
here. At the Feed Cellars.
At Padded Creek Cellars.
Padded Cellars. Petite. Why don't we say Petite?
Because originally it was Petite Cellars.
Well, that's
it was,
you've told me that
Petite
before.
Creek.
Padded.
It was, yeah. So
was I get confused.
Yeah. But no, it is Padded Creek Cellars. It is here in Woodinville. We're going to have live music. Some really great musicians. We're going to have wine barrel racing.
Pumpkin carving for the kids.
Pumpkin carving. We're going to also
pumpkin
have
bowling. Stumping of the grapes. I mean,
yeah.
Really.
You can challenge.
There's a little bit of everything for everybody.
A little bit of everything. It's just going to be a lot of fun. And
no, I totally.
Firemen. Yeah,
really.
Firemen. So call Brooke at 425-354-0015.
Get your butt down here, kids.
There's going to be a lot of women hanging out here.
There's going to be a whole lot of women here.
And then the firemen are going to go home, and then they're going to be like, what just happened?
You guys don't make me come over. Okay, so plan ahead, brought to you by iCandy Lash Boutique in Kirkland, which, by the way, for all of our socially savvy listeners, if you're looking at playing with lash extensions this week, if you mention socially savvy, it's $100 for a full set. And they are bringing us the big O. This is also brought to you by Chick Chat, bringing orgasm pleasure to all aspects of your life. Yes, I did.
Look at
LB. She's
getting ready again. Y'all missed a good show a few months ago.
Thursday, that was a few weeks ago, thank you. Thursday, October 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Fly Fitness, 2225 Carillon Point. Join Chick Chat for an October soiree, the big O. They're going to be having several different speakers talking about basically just how to enjoy all aspects of your life, really taking it to the next level.
What aspects would that be?
You know what? You can bite me.
that's definitely one aspect.
That
one
now, what's more important? What's
now,
more
do I bite your heart or not?
Now, what's more important? An avid fundraiser for different events. The Seattle Cancer Care Alliance is a world-class cancer center treatment that is going to be the beneficiary of this event. So that will be a very good one. Go to Chick Chat Seattle on Facebook to find out more information on this event. Okay, Mr. Michael, where are we going to be at next week? Mr. Smart Alec.
Next week, you can find us at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Seattle. Beautiful place. And we'll be talking fundraising Saturday. So really cool stuff, though.
Yep, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. So thank you so much if you're a Socially Savvy listener to enjoying the show with us. I'm sorry you couldn't have been here with us. We drank some great wine. We had a whole lot of fun, and we're going to socialize now. So everyone hats off and have a great week, everybody.